everybody, welcome to What You Doing? Back with episode 2. Very exciting. We didn't quit after the first one. I'm here with Penny, who was supposed to be episode 1. We mentioned it at the start with Star. But as we'll get into, Penny's a very busy person. Penny, say hello.
Hi, my name's Kompang. You can call me Penny. Asian American trans femme, titter pig creator, and talking about nerdy things all over the internet.
Penny created every titter pig.
I even created the term titter pig. It definitely was not Klaus from Dungeon Noob's Guide. Don't listen to him. Mine now. He can't have it anymore.
That sounds like a thing a faker would say.
Right?
It sounds like he's clout chasing to me. I definitely heard you say it first, so. And now it's on the podcast, so it's basically like trademark. You emailed yourself the trademark.
Yeah, that works for me. That sounds right.
Yeah, this is irrefutable. I'll get this submitted to the Library of Congress as an audio recording, and then that's all we need. So, Penny, you mentioned Titter Pig Academy. We talked about Titter Pig Academy with Star. We mentioned it kind of at the end. I was going to bring it up, but what is Titter Pig Academy in a real quick summary, and how'd you get started?
Yeah, so Titter Pig Academy is it's a Discord that started as it's a collection of like a bunch of TTRPG content creators and enthusiasts. We wanted a place specifically to help people earn more games. So that's what it started as. It wasn't even my idea. I just pressed the button to make it go, and then like a whole bunch of people hopped on board. You know, because you were there. You've been there since the beginning, which is awesome. We appreciate you. But yeah, that's basically what it is. Recently, we've been kind of branching out, and we did some branching out at the beginning too. I think with some like YouTube streams and stuff like that. And now we're starting on like a podcast and like a blog. There might be a newsletter at some point, but I gotta like figure out what I would want to put into it and like how I would want to set it up and all that stuff. So
that's the difficulty with any venture, right? Is at a certain point you're like, well, all right, if we do this, I guess I gotta figure this out.
Yeah, exactly. And it's like, I don't want to just force it. Like, I don't want us to have a newsletter for the sake of having a newsletter. I want us to have a newsletter because it's a newsletter being worth subscribing to. Right. It's one that like people actually get benefit from. Because if I'm just doing it to say that we have it, then then I'm wasting my time. To put it bluntly. So that's not what I want to do. I want to, you know, like there are ideas for growth, but also I want the growth to be organic and come as a result of like an actual necessity that I that I see, right? Like a hole that I can patch.
Right. And that was kind of the idea with the Discord anyway, was you know, we were all just complaining, commiserating, grousing about, you know, how hard it is to I guess not necessarily how hard it is to teach games, but how hard it is to get connected with the people who want to learn games.
Yeah, there's sort of a gap there, right? If people want to learn games and people want to teach games beyond D&D 5e, there wasn't really like a dedicated place for it. And like we were talking about this in another Discord, right? And it was after one of the Wizards of the Coast fuck ups. I don't even remember which one. They do a lot of bad things.
I don't know if I can tell you.
I have no idea which one it was. But I remember a lot of people talking and like more than one person saying, I would love a dedicated space just for that. A Discord just for that, where we could like, if you see someone on TikTok, if you see someone on Twitter or Instagram or whatever, that's like, hey, I want to learn this game. Where do I do that? It'd just be able to say, hey, join this Discord. We can help you learn it. And so that's what we did. And like, It's been going really well. We have like 340 members now.
Oh my gosh.
Which is way more than I ever thought that we would have. To be perfect.
It's a lot of people.
It's a lot of people. Right?
Every so often I come back and I look and I go, "Oh, there's some new people in the Oh.
Yeah.
And you know, there's like 8-10 people.
Like, yeah, sometimes they show up like 4 or 5 at a time and I'm like, I didn't expect that. somebody One video must have gone really well, or something, right? Or like a post on social media. Yeah, one of the things we did recently that you know already, Tater Pig Academy is on most social media these days. We're on Blue Sky, we're on TikTok, we're on Instagram, we're on YouTube, we're on Threads. So we're pretty much everywhere. The accounts aren't super active because it's just me behind them, and I prefer to use my own accounts. But I do try to use the Titterpig Academy accounts too, so people actually see it and they know what we're doing. And
yeah,
you know, if they want to learn more games, they can join.
And like you said, like you want to go for organic growth behind these things, and you know, having an account on social media just makes it a little easier to say, "Hey, come check this thing out." I'm not just giving someone a random link. I'm like, hey, look at this account that has however so many followers and has been around a little bit. It looks
and
1 degree like less sketchy.
Yeah, it's 1 degree less sketchy. It's a dedicated account. It makes it easier too to just like tag at Titterpig Academy than have to type out the URL, especially on like TikTok where URLs don't even work in comments. Right. So having that is nice, and I think it makes it looks legit when I have, like, you know, on the video accounts, there's a bunch of videos of me saying, here's how to play this game in 1 minute. Here's how this game works in 1 minute. It's most of the videos on there right now. There's some other stuff where I talk about a few different aspects of the hobby, but that's the majority of the content, and I think, like, those videos are doing really well. So I think that is what people want to see. They just want game recommendations.
Right. And that sort of like game in 1 minute stuff is really solid. It's really evergreen, to use a industry lingo. If you do, Wild Sea in 1 minute, if all of a sudden someone's talking about Wild Sea, it's like, oh yeah, here's this video, or this, you know, it might get picked up at some point, just randomly pushed in the way that TikTok decides to do sometimes.
Yeah, and like this stuff isn't just on TikTok, right? It's on YouTube Shorts, and it's on Instagram, and it's on Blue Sky. So it's like you can find it just about anywhere. And like YouTube, to be perfectly clear, YouTube sucks in a lot of ways. But one of the things it's much better at than TikTok is actually searching for a specific video and being able to find it. Which is why it's nice to have the videos on there.
Yeah, that is my big sort of what do you even call it, like the big decision maker between YouTube stuff and TikTok stuff is YouTube is much easier to search, much easier to link, much easier to pull up older content than YouTube, where even now that they've made that change where they show you like, oh, here's the videos you made a year ago, whatever.
Yeah,
I feel like half the time it's just like, well, that's not really relevant to anything.
I think
today, so I'm not worried about it.
Yeah, I think if you're searching for a specific video or specific types of information on TikTok, it's a lot harder to find. TikTok works really well for what I think it was originally supposed to be, which is, you know, a video-based social platform where people are interacting with each other, because that's how I've always used it. And I think it's great for that. I love seeing people like say something, and I can leave a comment or make a video reply, and we can kind of go back and forth and have a discussion, and a limited discussion. It is still a short form video platform with very limited comment section, but it does like start discussions a lot, and I really like that about it.
Yeah, I think you, TikTok is great if you're like, I want to see a bunch of people talk about the new Marvel movie. Or something like that, where you can just search Spider-Man and be like, I want to see a bunch of people talk about Spider-Man. I don't know why you would want that, but that's available. But anytime that I've tried to find a specific TikTok video, unless I had it actively saved or linked somewhere, I've never found it.
It's always very difficult, and you have to spend a lot of time if you end up finding it at all.
So, you know. As much as I love debating video platforms on this podcast, this is what it's about. Thank you for coming on my tech news podcast. So Titterpig Academy, it's this interview is fun because it's very fun to talk to someone else about a thing that I was also there for. It's very fun. Like, how did this happen? I'm leading. Just a bad improv sketch. So Titterpig Academy, what's kind of the goal? What's the aim? Writ large, like, you know, we talked about teach people games, You know, what sort of games, what, you know, what games have we had in the past? That sort of thing. Like tell us, tell us about what happens.
Yeah. So I think the goal at large is to be able to provide resources to a community that wants to learn games, because I think that there's, there are always barriers to like learning a lot of these games. Some people like need to play a game, you know, if it's a titterpig, they need to play it to fully understand it. And you know, we offer one shots for that. Some people like have questions about how things work, and we can answer questions. You know, and some people just think it's hard to find a group. And like, not only do we like staff members run games, but community members run games too. So there's a lot of games happening. Like basically we just want to make it easier for people to learn more games. Like that's ultimately the goal. That's why I'm like wanting to create content and resources in multiple formats, right? Like that's why I was gonna do you know, the podcast and the blog, right? Because some people want to read stuff, some people want to watch or listen to stuff. People learn in different ways, and I'm trying to address that. So ultimately the goal is to like just make the hobby seem less intimidating, to make indie RPGs easier to find people to play with, and just get more people playing more games. So there's a lot that goes into that. I think that I have a problem where I'm always coming up with new ideas and don't always have the time to implement them, but you know, I'm working on it. I'm getting there.
Well, but that's the joy of having a sort of group of people working on this Discord space together, is you can say, hey, I have an idea. I don't know if I have time for this on my plate. You know, how do other people feel about this? Are other people really excited about this? Can other people pick this up?
Yeah, absolutely. And that is a thing that you see happen. I do tap in other people to like run certain other games, or you know, I'm trying to get other people to write like blog posts and things like that. The blog just got started, so there's only the introduction post right now, as of recording time. But, you know, we're working on other things. Like, I want to make a guide on how to start playing RPGs completely for free, because there's a bunch of free games out there. There's free adventures. There's dice rolling apps, you know, and like, there's all these free resources. But, like, I think we have a reputation where, like, these games are expensive, right? Mm-hmm. And it's because the biggest game is expensive. you know, let's be real about that. It's like, there are three books when you play Dungeons & Dragons. If none of your friends have it, you feel like you have to buy all three. You feel like you have to buy a bunch of dice. And maybe you have to buy minis to do maps and minis combat and stuff like that. And it's like, most of that's just not true in the hobby at large. A lot of that's not even entirely true for D&D. So it's like, no, I want to make that resource for people to just be able to point at it and say, hey, here's a giant list. A bunch of resources that you can access for free. These are games you can pick up the core rules for free, and a lot of them are going to have like good third party support. You know, like Mouse Ritter and Liminal Horror and Basic Fantasy. Like all of those have a ton of adventures that you can get for them. All the stuff for Basic Fantasy is entirely free, I believe. There might be some paid stuff, but like I don't know if that's on the official website or not.
Yeah, it might be like a third party thing that's like, I want to charge for it, and it's like, okay, well, that's your,
but like,
that's
I your think
you made that.
Yeah, so I think the licensing for it implies that if it's like an official Basic Fantasy product, it's supposed to be free, and it's like an entirely open source ecosystem that anybody can make their thing official and submit it to the website, which is really cool. It's got a really active community from what I've seen. I haven't played the game yet. I might want to play that at some point. It is, I think it's a little bit too OSR for me, a little bit too close to like BX D&D, but like I might give it
That's kind of the vibe I got too. I remember looking at it forever ago I was getting into TTRPGs.
I don't know old editions of D&D that well, so if BX is not the one it's based off of, don't kill me in the comments.
don't come for us.
I don't know.
The old one. I know
3.5 because that's the one that I played. And fourth edition seems really cool. I never got a chance to play it. And that's it. That's all of my D&D, unless we want to count Pathfinder 1, which is D&D 3.6.
I think you include Pathfinder as like an asterisk. You know, yeah, like you played 3.5, like you played the lion's share of what Pathfinder turned into.
Yeah, like so, I think like, Pathfinder 2 did enough to separate itself, but Pathfinder 1 it was definitely just like this is a slightly improved 3.5.
It feels like 3.5 with the house rules that I like, and that's fine.
Yeah, yeah, I did play 3.5 and Pathfinder 1, and Pathfinder did seem better. It like there were just some common sense changes of like consolidating skills in ways that just made sense to me, and I'm like, yeah, that's better. I like that.
that makes sense. I would do that. Right. Yeah.
Yeah, like why do we have hide and move silently as two different skills instead of one stealth skill? I don't know. I couldn't explain what the designers of 3.5 were thinking there, but like. Off, I guess. If that's your jam, go for it. I don't know. It's not for me.
They were told they had to fit. I don't know. This is true. They had to fit 30 skills on the sheet, so they came up with 30 skills. I don't know. That's probably not true. That would be a bad way to design it. I hope that's not true.
Yeah. Like I think that there is like from a very simulationist perspective. Yes, those are technically not the same skill. Moving quietly and being able to like hide in your surroundings, and I understand that, and that's probably where that's coming from. It just that's why I think that I didn't like.
that's why I think a lot of the like Mathfinder stuff around Pathfinder, I think comes from that where you get a lot of circumstance bonuses for things, and so I think there's a lot of stuff like that in the design. Where they didn't want to come up with a whole other thing. They're just like, listen, this is a skill that's close enough. If you're doing this particular thing, you get a bonus, which, you know, adds complexity. I'm not gonna refute that in any way. But it's much easier than having two skills for ostensibly the same thing.
Yeah. Yeah, I would agree with that.
Yeah. And two is even better, I think. And then I think I actually really need to read Starfinder 2nd Edition, because I believe they condensed the already condensed skill list there. And
yeah,
I like skills. I only want a couple, though. I only need some.
Yeah, I want to try Pathfinder 2 at some point. I have a feeling I'm not going to like it that much, because it's not, like, within the design space of games that I usually like. But, like, when I look at it, I'm like, it feels very purposeful with its design. Like there's a lot of intention behind the design, which is something that I don't see in other games in that space, and so I'm like, I think I'll like it better, you know. So
well, I remember yeah, I got the new as of this recording, I don't know if it's still active or not, there's a new Humble Bundle for Pathfinder, like they do very often, and it has the beginner box stuff that apparently they updated for the new remaster version, and I should read that and run that in Titterpig. I'm gonna say this into the microphone, I will run that in Titterpig. I'm gonna commit to before the end of the year. That's what I'm gonna do. You heard it here. Penny heard it here first. I just see what I do is I just don't release this recording ever.
You just edit that part out.
The lost. I just edit that part out of it. Right. No one's beholden to it.
Edit that out and then gaslight me when I confront you about
right.
it.
It's that's fine. Never. No, that's never. Listen, Penny. Right. You were the first person to say a Titterpig. That was all that we said on that podcast. So I don't understand what your problem was. I don't know what you're talking about. But I remember them going into Pathfinder 2E, talking about like very specifically the design ideal of wanting to make characters easier, wanting to get to, you know, through the character generation process easier, make character options easier to expand,
and I think
down the line.
Yeah, and I think another thing that they did with Pathfinder 2 is they did a much better job of not having trap options of like character builds that are just not very good. I'm not saying that doesn't exist because I have not played the game, but my impression of it is that like, no, most of the character options are pretty useful, and you can get like cool character powers right at level 1, which is something I love when you're supposed to be like powerful characters. Like,
right,
you should feel powerful right at the beginning, even if like you're not taking down, you know, like dragons and gods and shit. Like, you know, when you fight that owlbear for the first time, you should feel like a badass.
Mm-hmm. And that you have like specialization, you know, your character does the thing that you're like, I want to be the best detective ever. And it's like, okay, cool. Yeah, you can do that. You will find all the clues, all the secret things, and that's great. This was harder to do with Star when we were on video, and part of editing that and realizing for the second time, actually, that editing a video thing is really difficult. Is why I'm just like, I'm just gonna do audio.
Yeah, there's a few videos on my channel, on my YouTube channel that were like edits of streams that I did. Like how to play this game, whatever. The one I edited the most was how to play Grok, and after that I decided I don't want to edit the whole thing. I just want to like condense it down a slight bit. And then eventually, right. I just stopped streaming. So
you want to edit it, you want to front load the edit, which is by just putting less.
Yeah, absolutely. Because like I edited the Grok video down from like 45 minutes to like 25 or something like that, because there were a lot of pauses and things like that. And I just kept in what was necessary, but it took me several hours to do that, and I'm like, this is not worth my time. If I had an editor, I would still do videos like that, but I don't, and I don't want to edit them myself, so I'm just not gonna do it. instead, I'm gonna release short form videos that don't require editing, because I can do that relatively easily, and then we'll record a podcast, and somebody else will edit it, and that'll be great.
That was exactly the line of thinking I had about doing videos. Was I was like, I could go through all this, or I could not, and I don't want to. So, great.
Yeah. Our podcast is going to have video. We did talk about it. And I wanted video for Titterpig Radio, because like when we get into teaching like specific games and things like that, being able to show the character sheets, I think is a great way to be able, like being able to show stuff from the actual game to the audience.
Mm-hmm.
So they know what we're talking about, and just having those visual aids, I think, is going to be really beneficial. The early episodes were kind of covering broader topics, and it's not as necessary, but like I'm like, we might as well start with video now, so we kind of get the hang of what we're doing before we get into the stuff where video's absolutely necessary.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm not against the idea of doing video in the future. Like it depends. Like I'll tell you off air who I'm planning for an upcoming episode. But for them, part of the sort of thing that we're talking about is their graphic design work. And so that's a little harder to convey as an audio medium.
Yeah. You need video for that. If you're going to show off visual work, you need the actual visual element there.
Yeah. So it'll be a thing that I think I'll just address as it comes up, as it becomes necessary. But doing audio makes it a bit easier, a little more flexible of a schedule, especially now when my house is a mess because of ridiculous stuff. That's just I can still do the episode. It's great.
Speaking of scheduling, one of the things I thought about doing for the blog is like I can do text-based interviews with people that I know and like, you know, in the scene. Because like I can just message someone on Discord whenever, right?
And
have that conversation with gaps in it and whatever, and then I can take that and I can turn it into a blog post about like, here's what Rain has to say about like running and participating in game jams and how that's a good stepping stone into like designing games. Because that's one of that's like the first one on my mind. But there's gonna be other ones too that I could interview somebody over time and then get really good information out of it for people who are wanting to learn like more games, right, to get into TTRPGs as a whole, you know, to enter the Titterpig hobby in whatever way they desire, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think going back to what you mentioned before, like doing blog posts, doing podcasts, doing videos, it's about trying to meet people where they are, right? Like you mentioned, it's because people learn different ways, but it's also you know, it works in your benefit that they're different platforms and people are searching for the information in a different way. So if someone's looking for a video, they're on YouTube looking for a video, you know? Yep. And so, you know, you can sort of tailor the video content to stuff that's more visually interesting. In an interview, you can say, okay, here's a blog post, you know, here's something kind of shorter, you know, maybe would be like 10-15 minute interview, which is maybe a little too short for something audio based, but is a pretty good length as a read. It's meeting people where it's meeting people where their interests are. Like, you know, I remember back in the G Plus days, you know, there was a lot of reading, there was a lot of blog posts, you know, just because it was still at a time when making YouTube videos, longer form stuff was harder for regular people. And people were on the app that was predominantly a text-based app anyway. And so it was a lot of, I remember there was a big thing. I'm not going to remember it. Adam's going to yell at me. There was a big thing on G Plus to basically never post just a photo. There was a big community pushback back when the OSR was like kind of just forming. You know, people would be like, here's the book I got. And people would be like, no, like post something cool from it. Post, you know, post what you like about it. Post a cool page. Post, you know. And so what usually would happen is people would post a cool thing that they got and they would talk about it, or they would talk about their day, or they would talk about something else. Because it was a text-based predominantly social media. And so I think what I appreciate about the way that you know, you and everyone, I don't count myself in that. I'm not patting myself on the back. Calm down. Are kind of approaching it is one saying, like you said, hey, here's some resources on how to do this. If you're looking for this, and then actively running games that people are interested in. There's the channel where people can just pop in and be like, hi, I heard about this game. It looks pretty cool. Is anyone interested in running it? And I feel like a good lion's share of those posts turn into someone running the game.
Yeah, I would say a lot of them do. Almost all of them get somebody responding, that game is on my list, I'm going to get to it. And not all of them have made it to the table yet. But, you know, we're all busy. And I think for the majority of the people that are staff in Titter Pig Academy, this isn't like the only thing that they're doing. Pretty much everybody's doing other things, whether it's in this space or in other hobbies that they're doing. So it's like we're all busy. Like, you know, we talked about Mo before, you know, we kind of started the recording. And like I've seen Mo's schedule and it is absolutely wild.
I've seen times Mo's been like, I did my gaming calendar and I was like, that's more gaming than I've done this year.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you're like, doing that. Like, this is your month.
Yeah, like this is your month, and it's like, do you have time to rest? Do you, like, when do you do your laundry? I don't understand. But yeah, like Mo is super busy because Mo obviously like not just a content creator person and not just a professor in Titter Pig Academy, but also like contributes to a lot of games. Like it is often a stretch goal in Kickstarters, right? Is one of the designers for one of the Pathfinder settings, one of the newer ones that's inspired by Central and South America. But I don't remember the name.
Oh, I should know this. Yeah, you're right. Yes, they did work on that.
Yeah, and they're like, you know, one of the lead designers on Kids on Kids in Capes, right? The newest
Kids on Capes.
Gonna be that like kickstarted earlier this year. So yeah, like there's, you know, they're doing a lot of stuff, and then we have like a bunch of other people that like Michael runs Actual Place every week, right? Like Jeff is doing his game design stuff, Wes is doing their game design stuff, I'm doing my game design stuff as well. So like a lot of us are making games, a lot of us are like, some people are like playing in like, you know, Actual Plays and doing like you're a Twitch streamer on top of all of this other stuff.
Yeah.
And well, I'm gonna pat you on the back and make sure that you know you're part of the team.
You're doing good, Ken. But yeah, what I
like, I include you when I'm talking about the theft. So,
but I mean, what's still good about that is, even if someone's like, oh, hey, you know, I'm interested in checking this out, even if nobody says, hey, I'll run this and it'll turn into a thing, one, there are other people there that are certainly interested in it, you know, and so there is that sort of inherent community thing. It's not what I see happen sometimes on like Blue Sky or Threads, where someone's just like, I saw someone the other day was like, wow, I just heard about Blades in the Dark. Has anybody heard about this? And it had like no replies or no interaction, anything like that. And so that just sort of stuck with me as like, dang, that's a bummer that like this guy is excited about something, but because of the algorithm, you know, there's no one there that's like, oh, hell yeah, I'm excited about this too, you know?
Yeah, no, absolutely, I agree. Because, like, if I'm excited about something and I want to share it, and, like, there's either no one that I can share it with, or the people I do share it with are just like, eh, yeah, that's kind of cool, I will be devastated. that's gonna mess me up emotionally for a while. So having that space to just be like, hey, I've always really wanted to play this game, and people are like, oh my god, I love that game, you know, I want to run that sometime. Or like another person's like, oh, I've heard of that game, what's, you know, but like I don't know much about it, and then a conversation starts. And yeah, that's something we haven't, like, that you were just touching on, that we haven't really talked about, is the community aspect of it, which I think is really, you know, it probably is really beneficial. I've heard from people, like, from Academy members, that they're like, yeah, this is the main Discord that I use. This is where, like, most of my social interaction comes from. And I'm like, that's wild.
That rules.
That's awesome. I wouldn't have considered that when we were making this space. You know, I didn't envision that it could have become what it is, which I think is great, because it means that the thing that it is wasn't made by me, right? It's made by everyone. And that's
right.
It's one of my goals, right? It's Tater Pig Academy. It's not Penny's server where she yaps about RPGs.
That's a different server. We have that server. Yeah. That's a different one.
Yeah, that's a different server. That one's invite only. But I think that's great, and I love to see that, you know, and I love seeing people try all these new games. Like, you mentioned Star already, because Star was the first guest. Star is in so many games.
Star's all over. It's really funny sometimes. Like, I will, you know, I keep up with what's going on, and I'll look at the games, and I don't mean this in like a mean way of like, oh my god, Star's everywhere, but it's like, you know, I'm like, Star plays so much. Star yeah. gets into it.
And that's like with time zone problems, right? Because most of us are running from Eastern or Central time. Mm-hmm. And Star's in Pacific time, right? and so she has to like schedule around that, right? And like, because she's a parent, she's got a kid at home, she does her own podcast. And so she's scheduling around that and trying to get these games in. And I think she does some actual play stuff.
Yeah, she has at least one. I think she has one regular and then one semi-regular. So
yeah, I know she has one regular. That's an all women D&D game, which is fantastic. We love to see that. And then
episode one, if you want to hear more about Star.
Yeah, and then there's some other ones. But yeah, Star is great. Go follow Characters Without Stories and everywhere, because we love Star, and we love to support her. But yeah, I love seeing these people hop in to learn all these games. Some of them they've never heard of before, and they're like, that sounds cool, I want to try that. And some of them are like games they've specifically requested too, and they're like, I've always wanted to play this. And they're always super excited to try something new, which is something that I love. Especially when it comes from people who like haven't played a lot of games. Right? Which is a decent chunk of the people. Like, it's definitely a mix, right? We have some people who have, like, barely ever touched RPGs, and then we have some people who are, like, super deeply invested and just want to play all of the games that they can. And I think that that's cool. I think it's great that we have some people in there that are completely new, because, like, that's who I was targeting. I did pick up a lot of people who are heavily into the scene and are just like, I just want more places to play more games. And I'm like, yeah, come on in. We'll run a bunch of different stuff for you.
Well, and I think that's part of, like you said, like, this isn't the thing that you built. This is a thing that, like, you know, you started and built itself. Because, you know, I remember, like, you know, it was the handful of us, but, like, so quickly, it felt like a good handful of people who were just interested in whatever came in. And I think the sort of exciting thing about this server is it cuts down on not necessarily the noise of trying to find out about new games, but just the, like, it's very difficult to find. I was talking to somebody the other day about how kind of easy it is to find out about indie video games, because there's so many channels and creators and podcasts, like, on every platform that are telling you about indie video games. And you can see an indie video game, you know, you can look at the video and you can go, okay, maybe that's a game that I'm interested in. But for a TTRPG, it's so different. Like, I can show you the book, but that doesn't mean anything. I can show you a page, but that doesn't really mean anything. And so much of the game is not just like, oh, it's a cyberpunk game. And you're like, okay, maybe that gets you interested. But it's like, okay, what kind of cyberpunk game? What sort of system is it? What is this? How many players is it? So,
and right, it's like, I couldn't even tell you how many cyberpunk games I own.
A lot. Right. And so if you, like, you could be somebody who just does cyberpunk games, and you would still have so much to talk about. And so what I kind of appreciate is in Taterpick Academy, the thing y'all set up is, and again, I say y'all, I have very little to do with this. I was just kind of around. You know, you've sectioned the games, not really by genre or system. It does exist, but just sort of by overall theme. You know, yeah, you have trad games and story games.
Yeah, I would say that's like play style, right?
Mm-hmm.
And there are board game like equivalents, right? That would be like separating out like roll and writes versus like worker placement or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know a lot about board games. I do know some of those terms, but yeah, like we separated out by play style so that people could. One of the reasons was because we wanted to have tags so we could tag the relevant people when we posted a game that mm-hmm. people could play and learn, and also so that you didn't have to see all of the discussion for all of the games. Mm-hmm. And I think it's worked out pretty well. It does mean we have a ton of channels if you can see all of them, like I can and like you can, right? Like we see everything, and it's so many channels. I think the categories make sense, right? Like we have the traditional games, like where you'll find Fantasy Age, where you'll find Savage Worlds, and Dragonbane, stuff like that. And then we have the story games where you're going to find Powered by the Apocalypse stuff, like, you know, Thirsty Sword Lesbians, Monster of the Week, Masks, as well as, like, Blades in the Dark, which is a Forged in the Dark game. I'm not going to fight Mom on that one.
I will. You know. Nothing else. I have nothing else to live for.
So, no, I don't want Mo to be mad at me. I'm a little bit scared of them.
I didn't say that wasn't true.
Yeah, it's like, no, I think that they can hurt me if they really want to. Despite the fact I'm probably larger than Mo. Like, Mo's big and Mo works out. But, like, I'm also, like, I'm 5'10", right? That's 9 inches taller than Mo.
Yeah, yeah. I was going to say, exactly. I was like, you almost certainly have the height on Mo.
Yeah, like, I have the height, I have the reach. I don't know about the weight. I have no idea how much Mo weighs. But I know that they work out more than I do. So,
yeah.
But yeah, and like Lumen games also fall under the more narrative games and Cortex as well. And then we have the eclectic group for stuff that just doesn't quite fit into one category or another. Like the Year Zero engine games are like a mix of like trad ideas and narrative game ideas. Cypher as well, where it's like it's taking enough from both that it doesn't cleanly fit into either category. And that also, like, includes, like, some games that just kind of have weird ideas and things like that. So, like, solo games are often considered, like, eclectic games for us by our categorization system.
I was going to say, did y'all put a dedicated solo space, or it's just under the eclectic? Huh?
Yeah, it's just under eclectic.
That makes sense.
I think it, like, when you select your roles, solo games is listed there. So people do know to, like, select that if they're interested in solo RPGs. But, yeah, solo games, like, they work. Like, I would say generally they're pretty narrative. But because you're playing by yourself with, like, an oracle, they work in a very different way a lot of the times.
Yeah.
With some exceptions, I think, like, Ironsworn is very clearly a derivative of the Powered by the Apocalypse system. But a lot of other solo games aren't, right? Like, Thousand-Year-Old Vampire, that's very much its own thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I recommended that to a friend of mine who said that she wasn't very interested in TTRPGs because of the improv aspects, but had done a lot of like text-based, like play-by-post roleplay stuff, like forum stuff.
Yeah,
and I was like, absolutely. I was like, let me tell you about Thousand-Year-Old Vampire.
Yeah, that's a great recommendation for those, like, you know, and like a lot of, like, solo journaling games, I think, could fall under that. But Thousand-Year-Old Vampire is definitely one of the very good ones. Or you could play, like, anything by Cassie Mothwin.
And you should.
Most of her games are, like, solo or duo games, and they're very, very good. Cassie's great to talk to as well.
Cassie is great. The Tangled Blessings expansion finished on BackerKit not that long ago.
Yeah, and it funded super fast, which I'm super happy for that and for Cassie. Sam Lee's games as well, Goblin Mixtape.
Anamnesis.
They publish under Anamnesis is one of them.
I think they publish under Sam Lee.
Not anymore. Now it's like Blinking Birch Games or something like that.
Oh,
yeah. The World We Left Behind is the most recent one from Blinking Birch Games. I believe it's designed by Sam Lee, and it might have some other contributors as well. My itch page is taking a minute to load, so I'm not 100% sure.
Yeah. According to itch, Anamnesis, Death of the Author, which I know is their other two games.
Yep. Yeah. So that's all Sam Lee, and they're great. So yeah, it is a team here. Sam seems to be the main designer, and then she'll get, like, other people to do art and graphic design and layout and stuff like that. So that's really cool. And I want to pick up The World We Left Behind. It seems really neat. Which is unsurprising for Sam. Sam is great and is a great person to talk to. She talked to me about itch funding stuff.
That's always cool. Fun.
Yeah.
Oh, right. The World We Left Behind is the one she did as the like art installation thing as the New York City Ballet.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's really cool.
Yeah. I remember when that happened, and then I forgot that this was that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I will. If you're listening, if you're like, I'm interested in this, the link to this will be in the show notes for sure.
Yeah, so it seems really cool. I definitely want to pick up the game at some point. It's a world-building game about astronauts exploring an alien planet. The sentient aliens are no longer there, but there is still alien life on the planet, and you get to, like, describe that and, you know, kind of figure out what happened to the world and all that stuff. This is a really cool idea. I like that. It supports solo play as well as, like, you know, multiplayer stuff. It says for 1 to 5 players with no prep, and generally you're expected to play from 2 to 4 sessions, but there are one-shot rules as well, so
always good.
Pick that up and give it a go.
Kind of tying into the community conversation we were having, just kind of the inherent community of the Discord space is kind of what just happened here, right? Where because you are filtering out a lot of the sort of noise to gold ratio, as a term I'll just make up, which is not a thing, you're able to focus on, you're able to learn the designers and sort of hallmarks that you like.
Yeah.
You know, like Fairy RPG has been doing a bunch of game jams.
Yeah.
And they've been connecting with other designers and you know, designers have been working on their stuff. They've been working on other stuff. And it's a lot of cross-pollination that once you sort of are able to break through into the scene and you follow one or two or three designers, suddenly you're exposed to a whole breadth of, of games and designers and works.
Like at some point it just feels like all of a sudden you know everyone. And like it, my experience is that people are very willing to talk to you. You know, like you mentioned Fari RPGs. I talk to RP a lot. I'm in the Fari Discord. I talk to RP on Threads and on Blue Sky a good bit. He gave me a free copy of Wastewalkers because I said I would talk about it on TikTok.
Which is
awesome. Wastewalkers did end up being free after that, so it didn't really matter that much that I got a free copy because I got it like 2 days before he just turned it free for everyone. But it was still cool.
Right, it's still nice of him.
Yeah, it's still nice. And like the bar for like, I'll give you this if you make content about my game is like so low. It's basically on the floor. It's like if you talk about it one time on any social media platform, you would probably get a free copy if he offered that. You know, he loves talking about like layout and game design as well. And I believe is the person who coined the term rules bright in like opposition to like rules heavy versus rules light. It's like it's not about the amount of rules. It's about how they're used and like rules bright games, all of the rules are reinforcing the themes of the game is kind of the intention behind that usage, which is something I really agree with for sure, right? Because it's like, I wouldn't say Blades in the Dark is a rules light game, but I would say that it is definitely rules bright. Like, all of the rules reinforce the theme of you guys, like, the player characters are running a gang in, like, this fantasy steampunk world that's surrounded by ghosts. You know, like everything about the game just points you in that direction, and I love that.
Excuse me. You're doing things and the rules are there to support you doing the things and lead you forward.
Yeah, absolutely.
Which it's a great way to describe it, because
It's really good. It's definitely really cool. And, you know, and like I said, I've met a lot of people in the scene, and it's been amazing, you know, and there are like any hobby, there are shitty people out there. Unfortunately, that's going to happen, and you just need to be aware of it if you're like getting into the hobby and you're starting to interact with people online. Some people can be dickheads. I'm not going to lie to you, but it's nowhere near the majority. Right. You know, especially if it's smaller accounts that like are game designers and content creators and stuff. If you interact with them, they will probably respond.
Mm-hmm. And that's the thing that I've always enjoyed about my time in the TTRPG community, is that by and large, people are just excited to be doing the thing and are excited to share the thing with you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's like, oh, are you interested in this thing? Cool, let's talk about this thing.
Yeah, most of us are just like very happy that anyone is getting joy out of the stuff we make. You know, we're almost astounded that happens sometimes, which maybe is a little bit of a problem. But
I do feel like there's a lot of times that I've seen designers like make a game and then someone plays it, and it's almost like they forgot that they made it to be a thing.
They forgot that people could go out and like buy this game. They forgot, like, some of them, like, they did like crowdfunds and stuff like that, and it's like, did you forget you did a crowdfund and a bunch of
people paid you money directly for and it's like, what? It's like, no, it's okay, it's fine. You're good.
You know what, keep making cool games. Don't even worry about it.
don't think too hard about it. It's okay.
Yeah, it's like I'm worried if you focus on it too long, you might scare yourself away from ever making a game again, and we don't want that.
Yeah, right. The idea of people looking at your thing for too long might scare you, and so don't do that.
Yeah, don't worry about it. Just keep designing.
All right. So Tater Pig Academy, I think, in the spirit of Tater Pig Academy and learning TTRPGs, I asked Star a question. And Penny, this is your question. Someone is getting into TTRPGs or is very, very new into TTRPGs. They're still in a discovery phase, right? They're still very fresh to the hobby. What are three games that you would suggest they look at? Not beginner TTRPGs, because that's not a thing. We can have a whole conversation about that. But three games that you would suggest they look at as like barometers. Like, here are three games to try to zero in on what you might like in the hobby.
That's really interesting. Okay, I have to think about that for a second.
Well, I'll yap a second to give you a thing. So you were talking about earlier playing Pathfinder 2, and you were like, I don't know if I would like it, but I'm curious on some of the design things and some of the ways they did these. And one of the big things I always talk about, I portray it mainly to video games, but it applies to other media, is sometimes I think you have to, and I guess I have to is maybe not the right word. You should engage with media that you think you might not enjoy or is something outside of what you normally like. Because I think it's important sometimes to flex the muscles of like critical thought. You know, if all you do is play JRPGs, maybe every so often you should play a platformer. You should play a farming game. You should play, you know, a more action-based game.
Yeah.
To sort of understand the mechanics, the themes, some of the other things going on. If for nothing else than to understand, oh, okay, I, as much as I love Animal Crossing as a genre and as a design and stuff, I don't like it because it is very sort of open-ended and what it wants you to do, and it's the freedom that it gives you in that is something that actively kind of puts me off. You know,
yeah,
I feel
the same way about a lot of open world games, as well as like Animal Crossing. I like watching, like, my wife played Animal Crossing a lot in like 2020. Mm-hmm. And I loved watching her play the
game.
Her play the game was like relaxing for me.
Yeah.
Watching, like, trying the game myself was almost like paralyzing, because it's like, yeah, I don't know what to do.
I also spent so much of 2020 watching my wife play Animal Crossing.
Yeah, it's like, instead of that, do you know what I want to play? I want to play Guilty Gear, right? Like, I want to play Deep Rock Galactic. You know, I want to play a game that has a very clear objective.
Right. Even something like Deep Rock that is very just sort of like, yeah, you're just doing whatever for as long as you want. The goals are very clear. You want to get this much, whatever. You want to get seven of these. You got to get out alive. And you're like, okay, cool. What do I get for it? You get currency so you can look goofy. Great. Let's go. Perfect. Rock and stone.
I love that. Rock and stone. Yeah, that's one of my favorite games. But back to the question about RPGs, I think three that I would pick are RuneQuest is one of them.
Ooh.
So RuneQuest, ridiculously crunchy game, very involved.
Mm-hmm.
I think all of the rules really reinforce what's going on there. It's got like stuff that you don't see in a lot of systems, or one thing that you're going to see in that you don't see in a lot of systems is HP per body part, right?
Yeah.
And I think this is going to give you a barometer for how much you like crunchy games in a way that like isn't as ridiculous as like Palladium Rifts. Right. That's just too many rules for the sake of too many rules. I think
I can't in good conscience recommend you play Rifts.
Yeah, I think RuneQuest is like, it's a lot of rules, but like for a good reason, and it's also in the trad archetype of games.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think it fulfills one of like the one of the areas really well to like inform you on what you're going to like. Another one,
a neato setting play, too.
Yeah, I think you should play something like a one page game. Maybe Rysis, maybe like Honey Heist, something like that. These games are almost always going to be very narrative heavy. They're going to be very improv heavy on both sides of the table. And so like I'm trying to get like these extremes of different play styles. Because mm-hmm. you can figure out what you want to go with. So like these one page games, I think like, and a lot of times they're very silly as well. And that's something that you don't always know if you're gonna like the silliness at the table. Sometimes mm-hmm. the silliness just comes in no matter what you're playing, because it kind of depends on the group. But these ones are gonna lean into the silliness a lot of the time in your one page games. And the last one, I want to say something OSR, like maybe Dungeon Crawl Classics, maybe Cairn, maybe Morkborg, something very dungeon crawly. Mm-hmm. Something that's really focused on like just that aspect. And that's going to like tell you how much you like keeping track of your inventory. That's going to tell you how much you like exploring for the sake of exploring.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And whether or not like you want more of a reason to explore this place, because there are a lot of games that give you that, but I think like in the case of like Morkborg and Cairn, a lot of it is just like you're doing that because that's what the game is.
Mm-hmm. Those games are gonna tell you if you enjoy the OSR mindset to games.
Yeah, the OSR mindset is like a whole thing that separates it from the rest of the hobby. And I think one of the big things in OSR that's emphasized more than in other areas of the TTRPG space is that they treat their games as a game. And like your player character isn't that important. They're the avatar with which you interact with the world. But like, it's not necessarily about the story that you're going through. It's not about these big narrative arcs most of the time. It's more about like being able to use that avatar to get around obstacles, right?
Right.
Whether those obstacles are like traps, whether they're, you know, difficult terrain, whether they're like enemies, whatever. There's obstacles in the way of like usually you finding treasure of some kind.
You want to get treasure. Yeah. There is three rooms that are almost guaranteed to have traps and or monsters.
Yeah.
And how move through that space?
Yeah,
as safely as possible.
So a lot of that comes down to like trying to be clever as a player, right? And to be able to use like your equipment in interesting ways, to be able to like put you in advantageous positions all the time. And that's a play style I think that like isn't easy to like figure out if you like unless you play an OSR game,
right? And I think there's a lot of people who will figure out very quickly whether or not they do. Like you said, once they engage with it directly.
Yeah.
Because I know people who play, you know, Pathfinder in a more OSR style format where, you know, like you said, like, you know, they use their equipment in creative ways. You know, they're not concerned with the quote unquote narrative. You know, their narrative is get through this dungeon, get loot. And Pathfinder, like we talked about, kind of being a branch of D&D supports that to an extent. But some of the more modern OSR stuff really drills in and focuses on those moments and does away with a lot of the other crap that doesn't matter.
Yeah, like, they just
the dungeon doesn't care about your grapple score.
Yeah, they throw out a lot of stuff. And like a lot of times in the OSR, the fewer dice you roll, the better, which is a very weird way to play an RPG. As a person who really likes rolling dice, that's, I think, one of the things I like the least about OSR games is that I feel like I'm discouraged from rolling the dice because rolling the dice means that I'm in a dangerous position, which I don't want to be in. But like when it comes to like getting creative with the resources you have, you do find that in other games. Like I've run Cortex for a lot of people and they will try and justify like how they can use a particular specialty or a particular asset in a certain way, and I almost always let them do it, and I'm like, unless it sounds like complete bullshit, I'm probably going to give it to you. And also, like, tags in Fate and City of Mist, I think, are used in that way by certain players. But I think the OSR is the only, like playing Cairn and stuff like that, you're almost forced to interact with the game that way. Like, mm-hmm. playing any other way almost doesn't really work.
Yeah, you're going to feel that friction of the game fighting you. You know, you're going to be like, I want to roll to attack the guy, and he's going to kill you, and you're going to go, what the heck? And it's like, well, you shouldn't have attacked him.
Yeah,
you didn't. Exactly. Didn't you hear when I described that he had this big plate armor right? and this big like, sword and the big shield, and you're just a peasant with a pitchfork? Like, did you miss that whole?
Right. It's like I did everything short of saying this guy can and will beat you if you right. engage him in a fair fight.
You have zero chance here. Don't do this. Like, I roll. All right.
Yeah, it's like you can't just walk up and attack it. That's a terrible idea. Unless you're willing to die, which I have played. I have played some OSR-ish games. Like I played, what was it? Year Zero Engine One, Forbidden Lands, which isn't quite OSR, but has some OSR vibe to it. And I did play that way. Of when I encountered a threat and I thought that they were insulting me, I would just go up and fight them. And someone would have to come in and save me because I was going to get my ass kicked.
That's a fun character choice,
was, you know, like I was. People knew listen, that I was playing a character that had an ego problem. So
listen, Penny. Sometimes you make weird character decisions and you stick to them and you reinforce them and you get really excited about the discount at the museum and just
yeah, absolutely. That does in fact happen.
That's just how it goes. Sometimes you're a duck and you're really divorced.
That also happens. Yeah.
That also happens. Yes. The fun of TTRPGs.
But those are my three picks. I think they cover.
Those are great.
Yeah, I think they cover the range pretty well because like you've got this super crunchy game where everything's going to be really involved. There's going to be a lot of math. But if you like, you're going to figure out whether you like crunchy games or not.
Right.
And then, like, with the one-page games, you're going to figure out probably if you like narrative games, and you might figure out how few rules you can get away with and still have an enjoyable game. Because mm-hmm. I'm not saying you're going to love Laser Into the Feelings. I'm not going to say you're going to love Honey Heist. You might not. You might say, I had a pretty good time, but I would love if there was, like, just more stuff to interact with game wise, which is fine. Mm-hmm. That's like a whole
That's good. I think that's a great takeaway.
Information. There's so many games that fit that. And then like on the OSR side of things, it's like the OSR games, like OSR players treat their games as games more than everybody else. I think players in a lot of other genres, a lot of other spaces, treat the games as a way to tell a story, which there's nothing wrong with that. But like you might not want to play that way if you're
right.
New.
It's the focus of the game and the genre.
Yeah,
and like you said, like these if you were presented with TTRPGs 101 and you played all three of these and you wrote down your feelings after playing them, you would have a pretty solid idea of what you think about TTRPGs after the fact, and you could probably say, okay, here's 2-3 more games based off that.
Yeah absolutely. And like I wish I could have more games on this list, because I would love to throw in like a world building game.
Mm-hmm.
Right, I would love to throw in like a Fiasco or a For the Queen, and I would love to throw in like a solo game, because like none of these really do those things. But like I'm like, the majority of TTRPGs are played in the traditional like GM and player format. So I figured I would stick with that. And you can also get input on whether you might like the world building stuff, whether you might like something like For the Queen, based on the things that you learn from playing Honey Heist and RuneQuest and Cairn.
Right. So, yeah, like, if you play Honey Heist and you're like, I liked what we were doing, but I kind of wish there was a little bit more going on. Oh, hey, might I interest you in For the Queen? Might I interest you in what would be another, I guess,
Blades. Blades, any Powered by the Apocalypse game, really? Like, yeah, if you're like, Honey Heist was cool, but I wish there were a few more rules, like just a little bit more. Yeah, PBTA is right there. Lumen is probably right there. So like, there's a lot of stuff. And then, like, you know, you can also, like, as you're doing the feedback, you could throw genre into that. Like, I want something sci-fi. I want something where I fight giant monsters, right? Mm-hmm. I want something where I'm like looking for ghosts and hunting down vampires. You know, it's like there's a lot of options in there. And so I didn't like. I don't think genre is a thing that, like, we have to worry about as much when we're talking about the three games, because, like, right.
People will determine genre on their own.
Yeah, exactly.
They like, know whether or not they like sci-fi or horror games.
Yeah, right. And, like, if you're hard set on trying a sci-fi game instead of a fantasy game, we can tweak our recommendations a little bit, you know. But, like, if you're willing to try three games regardless of genre, those are the three I recommend. If you're new to this and you want to, like, get a feel for what it is that you like in games.
Yeah, I think those are great choices. I don't know if I would have guessed RuneQuest at all. That was a surprising first choice.
Yeah, RuneQuest is definitely, like, I had to think about it because I'm like, I want something crunchy and I want something trad. I don't know if I want to go with just like Pathfinder 2, especially like sure. if you're relatively new, but you have played some games, you probably played something similar to Pathfinder 2. And so playing it won't tell you that much. And that's true of, I think, a lot of trad games. They're so close to D&D, you know, like your 13th Age and Tales of the Valiant and stuff like that.
Right.
And so I'm like, what's something that's really, really crunchy that has like a lot of stuff? And like, thinking about it, it's like RuneQuest has like really in depth with like combat and stuff like that. The base system doesn't seem that hard because it's a D100 roll under system, but like different conditional modifiers for it. The fact that you have HP per body part is a pretty big deal. And you'll know like right away whether you like the HP per body part or not.
That's a rule that somebody breaks out and you immediately go, oh. And you're either definitely in or you're definitely out.
Yeah. Another rule like that is Troika's initiative. For the people who don't know, in Troika, when you do combat, you get two tokens for everybody involved in the combat, as well as one end turn token, and you put them all into a bag and you pull tokens out of the bag, and whoever's token you pull out of the bag gets a turn. And if you pull the end turn or, you know, end round token out, you then put them all back in and start pulling again until combat's over, which is wild.
It's such a weirdo.
Yeah, like, you can go the entire combat with never having a turn, which is kind of absurd. I like it. I think that it makes the combat feel the way that the designer intended, which is that it's dangerous and chaotic, and you should probably avoid it if you can. I think it does that brilliantly. Other people are going to look at that and go, what do you mean I might not get a turn in combat? I never want to touch this game. I want to be able to fight people. And I'm like, okay, yeah, play a different game. Don't play this one. It's not for you.
I'm going to check this box on this list and we're moving down.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, just don't play it. If you want to fight things, don't play a game where fighting things means that you might just die without ever getting a turn. Don't do that.
Man. Almost like a real fight.
That's a great question, though. I have to say, like, that definitely made me think. So I appreciate that.
Yeah, thank you. I wish I could say that I had it in a stroke of genius. I just thought of it. So, Penny, we talked about doing a second episode for this and sort of focusing on Titterpig Academy for this one. And you've obviously referenced it throughout the episode. You yourself are a game designer, and I'm curious, you know, real quick, get people interested, what sort of games have you made? Again, like, I don't know, you know,
yeah.
sort of talk about them, and, you know, maybe we'll have another episode. But yeah, what sort of things do you create, to, you know, sort of, contribute to the TTRPG space, the Titterpig space?
Yeah. So when it comes to actually designing and making Titter Pigs, I've made a few games. Some of them never got like finished to the point where there was a downloadable PDF, because I'm a little unusual in my process of designing games where I make them a website first. That's not a thing I know that anybody else does, but I do.
I haven't come across it.
It makes it really easy to like share it with people, and I don't have to worry about formatting as much. It's just I write down the rules and they're there. But I am making other games that are going to be more completed and are going to be PDFs and things like that. And I publish them under Transcendent Tapir, which is a game studio that I'm starting. It's mostly me right now, but we're gonna have other people working in there as well. Charles is working on a couple of games he wants to release under it. Sadie Oakleaf of Oakleaf Insignia and Alice from Fapop are helping me on my big game project, Distorted Domains, which you played. It's mm-hmm. a great time. It's, you know, this like weird science fantasy. It's, you know, got inspiration from like Doctor Who. I've heard it referenced to like Adventure Time. I also pulled inspiration from Chuck Tingle, though I don't know if everybody knows enough about Chuck Tingle to see where that actual inspiration comes in, because it is not in the pounding. It is more in the weirdness of the Tingleverse, right?
I like it's not in the pounding.
Pounding. Though if you want pounding, there is another game I made called Supernatural Sapphix. So that's on the Transcendent Taper itch page, as well as on the transtaper.games, which is like the actual just website that we have, where you mm-hmm. can see the web version and get the rules for free. But that's like it's queer romance involving like supernatural creatures and cryptids, and everyone's toxic.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of what I wanted Thirsty Sword Lesbians to be before I played Thirsty Sword Lesbians. Mm-hmm. Thirsty Sword Lesbians, it is about disaster queers, and they do toxic things and stuff like that. But in the end, I feel like overall in Thirsty Sword Lesbians, these disaster queers are going to come together and resist this opposing force that's coming in, right, and trying to, you know, do some heteronormativity or some other like oppressive thing, right? So they're going to come together in the face of oppression, which is great, and I love that. But I also wanted a game that was like just
what if they didn't?
Queer people. I just wanted queer people to be disasters. I just wanted queer people to get the chance to play as the worst version of themselves. Because you know, when you're queer, you don't get to be the worst version of yourself.
No.
Right? Like when you're marginalized in any way, you don't get to be the worst version of yourself. And so you should have an outlet for that. And that's this game. If you want to be a vampire who is dating a Bigfoot and maybe you're eyeing some like new supernatural investigator that happened to show up on the scene, and you're like, oh, they're really cute, I might go and drop this Bigfoot and like go with them, even though their existence is a threat to mine because they might expose all of us, then do this game. That's what it's going to be about.
That sounds great. Yeah. I also love the idea of designing a game because you're like, I played this game and it wasn't what I thought it was going to be. And so yeah. I made that game.
And so I made it. I also made it as part of a game jam, the Queertober game jam, which is run by Rain from Rainy Day Games and the Hammer of the Gods podcast. Which is really cool. So I made this all in a month, and like I said, it's a pamphlet game. It fits on 2 pages. And you can pick it up for $2 and then like print off however many copies you need and just give everyone a copy, because the player rules also contains the character sheet. Like, it's just all in one thing.
Print off as many copies as you need and give them to everyone.
Yeah, absolutely.
But buy it first. That was the first step one.
Yeah. And then the other game that I didn't go over as thoroughly, Distorted Domains. That's, we're doing an itch funding campaign for that right now.
I'm getting funds. That's really exciting.
Yeah, I'm getting funds to be able to pay my contributors. I guess that Sadie and Alice are going to be doing layout and editing for me, and that's going to be amazing. Both of those. If you don't know Alice of Faypop, at Faypop everywhere, I think, and Sadie, which is Oakleaf Insignia everywhere, they're fantastic people, and they put out some really cool stuff all of the time. And so, like, I'm really excited to work with them. Absolutely a dream team of queer femme people, which is awesome.
Yeah, I didn't know they were working on that. That's exciting. I'm excited to see
that's really cool. And, like, you know, Distorted Domains comes with 5 settings that are all really weird and interesting, and, like, character options are wild. Matt played a divorced duck.
Yep.
I was good at the trombone. Nardi played a definitely normal human that wasn't a undead shambling swarm of limbs.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely not that. The definitely
totally normal guy.
That's what regular humans look like. You know, and, like, you can also be a sentient mannequin. You can be whatever you want. You're not limited to the options that the game gives you, because like, all of it's just on tables, and it's like, roll or select or make up your own option for every.
I love a good. We talked about roll tables with Star. I love a good table.
I really like tables too, and I really liked coming up with the tables in Distorted Domains. I was like, it really made me think about, like, all of the different possibilities, and then, like, when people started actually using them, we were always getting options that I never considered to put together, which is awesome. And
I wrote all of these down, but I never wrote every single item down,
and I still didn't, like, think about, like, all of the combinations that could happen from it, which is great.
I think the fun thing about the tables for Distorted Domains is there's just enough there to give you something to grab onto.
Yeah.
But not restrictive enough. Like, you'll get something and you will just immediately have an idea. And whatever your idea is will not be restricted by the game. Like, it doesn't matter what idea you just had. You're good. You're great.
Yeah, the game, you know, the game's supposed to inspire you, not restrict you. And I think it does a good job of that. And there are even more tables than when you played it. I've added more for different
Hell
things.
Yeah.
Like, when you get taken out now, and when you get overwhelmed, there's tables now for the negative aspects that you take on, based on, like, the way that you got taken out. And then there's also more negative aspect tables for each of the 5 domains. So there are specific conditions you can get in each one, and it's stuff like that, as well as, like, rewards tables. Like, I know you have the starting items table, but, like, one of the ways that I wanted to reward people in long-term play, aside from just giving them, like, advancement to make their character better at stuff, is to give them more assets. And so I made asset tables for each of the domains. They're a lot shorter. They're like a D8 asset table, but, like, but, you know, like, each column is a D8, and every item has, you know, 3 columns. 4 if you count the of column in the thing of stuff. But you shouldn't, because every option is of under of.
I love how excited you were to say there's even more tables.
I'm super proud of all of the tables that I made. Like, there's regular injury tables if you just, like, get taken out. There's, like, different stress tables. There's I gotta pull up. There's some really cool conditions in here. Okay, yeah. One of the negative aspects you can get is disappearing bones.
Great. So normal. Such a regular thing to happen.
Yeah. You can have a curiously shrinking body part. That's another cool one.
I mean, if any part of my body ever shrunk, I would be curious about it.
Yeah. And inconsistent gravity. That's another one. Your gravity for you just doesn't always work the same.
Great.
So that's, Yeah, so those are some of the things that could happen to you if you get taken out, and the weirdness of the domain you're in sort of infects you, which I think is awesome. I'm, like I said, I'm really proud of that.
Yeah. I love how inherently silly but evocative the idea is. It's just like, yeah, you got weird gravity now, dog.
yeah, absolutely.
Gravity's weird.
Yeah, Jack from Dungeon Club helped me write some of those, because like I was seeing what he was doing with like all of the swords that he was making for mm-hmm. TikTok for his swords game, and also like you could use them in D&D or whatever. And I'm like, hey, I'm making these tables. Do you want to be a sounding board for me? And of course they were just like, hell yes.
He's always down. Your
weird ideas. Yeah, so we worked out a bunch of that stuff. And it was great. I'm really proud of what we came up with, and I'm really happy for all the feedback that he gave me.
God, I just love the idea of just being like, whoops, bad gravity.
Bad gravity, right? Yeah, like you just jumped, and you jumped way too far because your gravity was low. I didn't know that.
You jumped. Just having low gravity day.
Yeah, it happens sometimes, you know, or just like, oh, my femur's gone. That's inconvenient. Hope it comes back soon.
I hope that buddy finds his way home.
Yeah, and like you played it, so you know, like all of this stuff in Distorted Domains is basically just like a label. It doesn't have like hard rules about how it works, so it's really just up to the table of how you want to end up playing that. Which always leads to cool ideas, like when people make their characters and they make their assets, right, and they get like the feathered shield of the void or whatever, they get to decide what that means. It only ever works that one way that they decide, but still they get to decide what a feathered shield of the void would do, and they get to do that thing however much they want. So yeah, it's great.
I think that's such a, like, I think a lot of people would gravitate to that sort of game because the freedom of the rule set means that, okay, you came up, like you said, feathered shield of the void. What does that mean? Well, it means this. Okay, cool. That's what it means.
Yeah, I have a player in my like ongoing game who has, I don't remember what the first adjective is, but it's a ring of transformation. What it actually does is it turns his character into a biblically accurate angel, but with tentacles.
Sure.
That's what he decided.
That has immediate, he's like, also, active use.
Yeah. Yeah, he's also basically playing a Mormon missionary, so it's very thematic for his character.
They love that.
Yeah, like, it was great. Like, he's just regular guy who's kind of annoying most of the time, and then he puts on the ring to help somebody, and he just turns into a biblically accurate angel with tentacles. And I'm like, yep, that's how that ring works. Anybody who puts it on just turns into a biblically accurate angel, but with tentacles. Because why wouldn't they? Why would it work any other way?
Yeah, if I had that ring, I would do that all the time.
Yeah.
Especially if I was a character in some sort of weird sci-fi situation, which he probably is.
He doesn't have it on all the time, which I think makes it funnier too, because like most of the time he looks like a Mormon missionary, right? Like he's just some scrawny dude in like a button-up shirt and his little tie and everything, and just like in these wild situations of like hunting down irradiated lizards and avoiding titanic hippo camels.
Yeah, if I was just a guy hunting down irradiated lizards, I would find a ring of turn into biblically accurate angel, but with tentacles. Very helpful.
Yeah, yeah,
that's just overall, just in general.
The thing with the irradiated lizard, because that's also like it's just on the it's just on one of the lists of like creatures you can find in the wild remains. It doesn't tell you what it does. When I ran it, they can, not only do they radiate just in general, but they can shoot radiation out of their mouth as like a laser, and like nobody in the village that they were in before they left for the hunt told them about that, because Because everyone in the village knows that's an irradiated lizard. That's what they do. Right,
it's a normal thing they do.
Yeah, it's like, that's just a normal thing. Of course an irradiated lizard shoots a laser of radiation at you out of its mouth. That's normal behavior for them.
That's standard.
Every single one of my players was so thrown off when it started like charging up the laser in its mouth and shooting at them. And like, nobody fucking told us about this. And I'm like,
you didn't ask.
I thought it was normal. Or like when I had people run into spider monkeys, and these are monkeys with eight limbs that throw poop webs at you.
Oh. Poop webs is a really bad combination of words.
Yeah, absolutely it is. Nobody liked that. Everybody thought that was awful and that I shouldn't have put it in the game, but it's there.
Yeah,
so now if you run a game with spider monkeys, they can just be regular spider monkeys, or they can be some other combination of spider and monkeys. This is how my combination of spider and monkey worked out in my brain. I was writing it. I'm like, yeah, it's good. Of course it's a monkey with eight limbs. And like, it still has to have the webs that spiders make, so it's in the ball of poop that the monkeys throw at you, and so they throw it at you, and then it sticks to you and into the ground around you and all that.
I would probably have closer to like a man spider monkey. You're familiar with man spider, Penny?
Yeah, I am familiar with man spider.
Yeah, so just kind of like a more man spider monkey situation. Web poop is really that's the meanest part. If I'm like. Sure, they shoot web. Oh, but that's also poop. Like, oh, come on. We don't need that. I don't need there to also be poop. That's just mean. All right, Penny, as fun as this has been, we do. I try not to have these go too long. We did talk about having another episode talking more specifically about your game design stuff. And, you know, maybe we'll cycle back around and do that sometime soon. But before we go, go ahead, let everybody know where they can find you online, socials, website, anything you want to point people to.
Yeah, you can find me across the internet at Penny Lescroach. Most active on TikTok and Blue Sky right now. Blue Sky, it's pennylescroach.transtaper.games, although I am the only Penny Lescroach as far as I'm aware, so if you look me up, that's probably me. but you know, I'm on other platforms like Threads and Instagram and YouTube and Mastodon as well. I also run the Titterpig Academy accounts. First, you can go to titterpig.academy, and there's links to all of our stuff that you can find there, as well as like our blog. When we have the episodes up for the podcast, those will be on there as well. And I run all the social media accounts on all the platforms, where it's just at Titterpig Academy, with the exception of Blue Sky, where it's titterpig.academy, because your name has to be a URL on there. Lastly, go check out Distorted Domains. It's itch funding. You can check out all of the rules for free at transtapir.games. / distorted-domains, or you can go to the Transtapir itch page and just go and buy like the very early PDF we have now and support our development of a much better high quality PDF in the future.
I like the idea of like, there's like an okay PDF, but what if we could get a better PDF
that has like, you know, it's not fully up to date yet because there's a bunch of stuff I updated on the website that didn't make it into like an updated PDF yet. And you know, like, it's just the formatting is not very good because I kind of did it pretty hastily on my own. So yeah, you buy the crappy one to help me make a good one for you later down the line.
Well, I mean, if anything's gonna get you to give him money for that will a nicer PDF, that'll do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
But yeah, all the links to everything Penny said will be in the show notes. You'll be able to find it, whatever. Penny, thank you so much for spending time with me today. I hope you had a good time, as good a time chatting as I did. As always, if people have questions for Penny, anything like that, reach out to the podcast. You know, we'll have Penny on again. But that's going to be it for episode 2. Say goodbye, Penny.
All right, yeah, we'll hopefully see you all another time, and I can talk about game design stuff.
everybody. That's episode 2 of What You Doin' Podcast. Thank you, everybody, for listening. I really made you wait for this one, didn't I? I had some life stuff come up. I had some stuff with my pets that just took a lot of emotional energy and really made it difficult to sort of work on projects like this. And, you know, just kind of had to take time for myself. So I appreciate everybody, you know, listening to the episode. I hope you really enjoyed it. As always, if you want to let me know what you thought about the show, if you have ideas, thoughts, anything like that, you can email me at feedback@mattcalder.com. You know, let me know what you think. And rate the show. I think that's a thing that you can do. I still don't know if it's a time limited thing. I don't know. If you enjoyed the show, please rate it. That'd be cool. Tell your friends. I love that I have to do all the things that I've heard people do for years on podcasts. I'm currently in post-production for episode 3. I actually got the interviews for that done very quickly over the holidays because I had some time open up. So episode 3 will be available much quicker than episode 2 was. And I'm really excited about it. It came together in a way I didn't expect, but ultimately it was super duper fun to do. And I'm really looking forward to everybody hearing that. As always, you can check out the show on Blue Sky and Instagram at What You Doin' Pod. And you can find me at Matt Calder anywhere I care to be. So until next time, take care of yourself.